Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Apply the Clinical Trials. For today's episode of the ACT podcast, I'm speaking with Dr. Michael Portinod, Senior Vice President, Head of Early Clinical Development, Hematology, Oncology, and Cell Therapy at Bristol-Myers Squibb. In his current role, Michael leads a team focused on developing cancer treatments to combat hard-to-treat diseases. He oversees early clinical development programs for a diverse range of treatment modalities, such as cell therapy, protein degraders, T-cell engagers, monoclonal antibodies, and small molecules. Michael is also currently a clinical assistant professor of hematology and oncology with UCSF Medical Center. So thank you so much for joining me today, Michael.
Thanks for having me on, Andy.
So first question, could you describe your career journey for our audience?
I actually started my hematology, oncology, and bone marrow transplant training at UCSF, where, as you said, I still have a volunteer faculty position. I did my postdoc there in the lab of Davide Ruggiero, where I studied cancer biology. And I had really this great privilege to work in a sort of translational project. So a scientist at UCSF named Kayvon Shokat had discovered a class of drugs, mTOR, TORC1-2 inhibitors. And I had been working on a lymphoma model where we understood that if you could block protein translation, there was a synthetic lethality under a genetic context. So I had tested Kayvon's drug and it worked really well in this model. And I was so excited to try to translate that to the clinic. And obviously, you know, found that challenging in my academic role, where really the focus was to try to understand the biology of why that happened. And I wanted to rush to the patients and try it out. So I, based on that desire, decided to look into industry. I had some colleagues who had gone and were happy with their careers. And that eventually led me to joining Celgene, which is now BMS, back in 2013, really to get into that space of translating drugs out of discovery into first-in-human studies in cancer patients.
So you are also the site head of the Brisbane facilities in the San Francisco Bay Area. Could you describe what you and your team are working on there?
Yeah, so Bristol-Myers Squibb is the headquarters in New Jersey, but we have a large Bay Area presence. We have nearly 500 employees here over two sites, one in Brisbane at Sierra Point, which is a new site, and one in Redwood City. Redwood City was where a lot of the immuno-oncology drugs came from, actually. And there we house our tumor microenvironment cancer biology group, who are discovering new targets and developing drugs towards targeting the microenvironment. And then at Brisbane, we have a little over 200 people, and it's a pretty interesting site. So we have discovery folks, so in biology and chemistry, again, trying to understand which targets to go after for serious diseases, and then developing actual drugs for that. We have translational scientists who help us decide which specific patients to go into, which biomarkers to use during those trials. And then we have clinical teams actually there embedded with those folks who are developing the trials alongside them. And at that site, we cover cardiovascular disease, oncology, hematology, oncology. And we have this really interesting area that, again, I'm super excited about, which is around protein degradation and a group there focused on that.
Great. Thank you. Also, you know, more on your career. I saw on the BMS website, you actually just mentioned this. It says you played a leading clinical role in the evolution of targeted protein degradation. So could you describe that journey for us? And also, you know, maybe some of the work that you're doing with it right now.
Yeah, so when I came into Celgene and at the time in 2013, there was really a remarkable sudden explosion of understanding of this space, which is called protein degradation. So there was an infamous drug called thalidomide. I'm sure your listeners have heard of it, that obviously was given to pregnant women for pregnancy nausea back in the 1950s and caused horrible birth defects. And eventually, years later, in the 1980s and 90s, this drug came back and was developed to treat some very serious diseases, complications of HIV, and eventually cancer. And Celgene was the company that developed it in cancer and a disease called multiple myeloma, and then later developed two subsequent drugs, lenalidomide and pomalidomide. These drugs were all developed, a huge impact on the outcome of these patients, so changed the survival of this disease. But they were developed without understanding exactly how they worked. So scientists had observed what they do to cells outside the body, you know, in culture, in vitro, and then ultimately gave them to patients and tried many different things and saw where it worked. But in 2010, a scientist named Hiroshi Honda, he was trying to figure out why thalidomide caused the birth defects, and essentially identified that it bound to a protein called cereblon. And cereblon is part of the machinery in a cell that causes proteins to get degraded. So cells want to make proteins and they want to get rid of the proteins to coordinate, you know, the function of the cell. And cereblon is part of that machinery. And so subsequently, scientists at Celgene and Harvard University discovered that these drugs, lenalidomide and pomalidomide, bind cereblon. And they recruit new proteins that aren't normally degraded, very specific proteins, into that machinery and causes these proteins to go away. And this is actually how these drugs were causing their anti-myeloma effects. And so I had just arrived at the time of this discovery, and it was really amazing. Basically, the rules of how these work started to become revealed. You know, why, how the drug interacted through structural biology. And suddenly what you could see is that we had a platform. Now we could design the drugs and go after new targets. And so we established at the time what we called the Protein Homeostasis Thematic Center of Excellence and started to really think through the rules. What should we go after? Why would you want to degrade a protein, a target, instead of, you know, to inhibit it? What would make that compelling? And obviously, of the total proteins in a cell, there are very few that can be classically drugged or have been drugged in oncology. But now through this degradation, you have a vast space, a vast number of proteins that you know are linked to causal human biology, but had no method of targeting, and now you do. So I've really had the privilege now at BMS over the last decade taking many of these drugs into the clinic, into first in human. And we have several of them in registration studies. One of these drugs, we just had a New England Journal of Medicine paper published online in the last 2 weeks. So it's been just such a fun journey to work in this space. And it's like, you know, one of the most satisfying scientific journeys, you know, I could have ever imagined for a career.
Just following up on that, what does the future hold for this space? You know, like, what do you see clinical development in this space looking like, say, in the next handful of years?
Yeah, so at BMS, we're very focused. This is one of our high priority areas. And it's also, I think, an area where we really differentiate from other companies because of this heritage and expertise. And so if you look at our pipeline, we continue to, you know, develop these drugs. Initially, they were developed in hematology, which we continue to do. But now, really, you're seeing our solid tumor oncology drugs in the clinic. What you've also seen is a flood of small biotech companies enter the space. And that's been, you know, I think, fantastic for innovation for patients. And obviously, there are so many things to target that BMS can't do it all. So we stay very close to those companies through business development. I think the challenge of this is that it's quite nuanced. And I think you see that a little bit in the biotech space, where it hasn't been so easy for those companies to enter the clinic as I think hoped initially. So BMS, I think we have a strong advantage in this, for a few reasons. One is we've really built out our library of these cereblon modulating drugs that we call CELMoDs. And of course, through building massive libraries of chemical matter and running those through proteomics, we can sort of find the rules, find what makes something a substrate. And then we have a lot of disease expertise. So we're a very large pharmaceutical company with many clinical trials in cancer, where we have data from patients where we can understand the unmet need currently and in the future. So linking that patient biology, the causal biology of resistance, to our CELMoD library and what targets we can degrade, and then really picking high quality targets and compounds to take into clinic with proof of concept. So I think that is, in this space, the challenge is like what to work on and how to convert it well.
And great, thank you. So now you kind of went into the challenges a little bit, but speaking maybe from more the focus of the clinical operation side, which is more of our audience, what are some of the challenges that you're seeing around the industry that are unique to oncology trials, and how do you think they can be resolved?
Yeah, so I think just to keep on these degraders as an example, we don't generally take these into healthy humans, right? And a lot of our oncology drugs have toxicities that are acceptable in cancer patients, but are not in healthy patients. We might do, once we've understood the drug better in patients, and we know we could put a certain dose into a healthy patient with a single dose, for example, we do that. But typically we start in cancer patients. And so the challenge there really is, you know, we don't want to give patients who are sick doses that are ineffective, right? So it's really to accelerate the trials to get to the right doses to test the hypothesis. And so I think the first challenge is really designing studies where you can have biomarkers, pharmacodynamic biomarkers, that get you to the right dose quickly and minimize patients to ineffective doses at the same time balancing safety. So that's an initial challenge. And then obviously your listeners may know that we have, the FDA has put out a Project Optimus, which is they have recognized that there are traditionally in oncology trials, we've gone to maximum tolerated doses, and this may lead to unwarranted toxicity if a lower dose could have a better risk-benefit profile. And so the FDA has asked us to do a lot more dose finding than in the past. And so again, that's a challenge because we're trying to develop the drugs quickly to get them to the patients who will benefit. And so how do we efficiently do dose optimization in the clinic? It certainly is a challenge. And I think, again, it's trying to design trials in a new way where you're really using a lot of data, not just safety data, but biomarker data, to get to those doses quickly, and then to spend the time, you know, obviously the cost and the patient enrollment, the investigators' effort at the right doses where the patients are potentially benefiting, but we can be understanding the safety better. So I think that's certainly an area. And then I think oncology, there's a lot of drugs being developed in oncology. It's a remarkable period of time in drug development. At BMS alone, we have something like 50 oncology assets in our pipeline, you know, for these patients. And so I think competition for sites, for patients, enrollment is important. So I think, you know, our approach has been to take a patient-centric approach to that. We want to make our trials attractive to patients. So we want to answer the scientific questions, but we don't want to put excessive burden on the patient or the investigators and sites that are carrying out the trials, working with the patients. And so there we've tried to have actual patients review our protocols before we finalize them. We're trying to use sort of artificial intelligence from looking at clinical trials, like clinicaltrials.gov, our own internal data, and looking at trials characteristics that target the right patients, but enroll faster. Those are some examples, I think, of kind of operational challenges that probably may apply to other disease areas, but are very top of mind in oncology.
Following on that, looking to the future again, where do you see the area of developing cancer therapies and specifically the clinical trials for them in about 5 years. For instance, in your last answer, you said more AI, more data. Is there a certain trend that you're seeing that we could see in the next X amount of years or?
Yeah, I mean, I think AI and machine learning is a good area to bring up because that's hot right now, but it's also very much an active area, I know, for our company and I'm sure in others. So at BMS, I'd say it's basically embedded in the entire process of developing cancer therapy. So our medicinal chemists are using machine learning to design compounds. So they make a bunch of compounds, you know, they get the output of their screen, they feed that data to an algorithm. The algorithm suggests what the next set of compounds should be, obviously with the chemist's mind and brain and experience guiding that. And that assisted sort of make test model, keep feeding, make, you know, test these, give the data back, has accelerated getting the right compound. And our aspiration, we already are doing that for many of our programs, but our aspiration is in the next couple of years for every single program to have that. Then if you go to sort of the patient side, you know, we have a ton of patient data from our trials. The patients have given us the privilege of donating their specimens, and we take that seriously. And so we're interrogating that data to understand characteristics of the patient, their prior therapies, their age, their baseline characteristics, the molecular features of their tumor, and relate that to resistance to the current compounds. So that requires incredible computational power because you have thousands of variables. And those are things that, you know, you couldn't do 10 years ago, but now you can. So that's assisting in us understanding, you know, both the target to go after and the right patients. And then I think on the trial side, you know, we are very interested in using, for example, language models. So can we take a protocol and rapidly develop a consent form? Could, you know, a ChatGPT type program do that? And then a human, you know, one of our physicians or scientists reads that obviously and has to edit it, but it really does advance how quickly we can turn out those kind of things. Same with regulatory submission documents. So the goal of this is that if we kind of embed this through the drug development process, which we are doing, and it's sort of early days on the trials, but I really do think in 5 years, this will accelerate the drug development process. And, you know, it will fulfill our goal of getting more drugs to patients faster. You know, that's our aspiration and our why at BMS. And I think all of these things that we're putting in hopefully get us there. So, and I definitely think we're applying that now. I think in 5 years, it'll hopefully transform the field.
Hey, great. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Is there anything else you want to end on or maybe a point that we didn't get to discuss?
No, I hope your listeners found that interesting. And I think it's such a great career for people who are interested and such a great time to be in industry. And, you know, I'm really proud of the work we do and the impact that we have for patients. And I guess I just want to leave your listeners with that.
Of course, I'm sure that they'll find it interesting. Michael, once again, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.